Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and this is Mushing Radio, and we are in the midst of the Iditarod Circus up here in Alaska. And every night during the Iditarod, we're going to host a daily show, a recap show on the Iditarod on KVRF 89.5 in Palmer, Alaska, as well as broadcasting live on the internet and as a podcast. But without further ado, I have a good friend and our co-host during Iditarod coverage. His name is Alex Stein. He is the writer and director of a Iditarod documentary called Mush, the Movie. It came out last year, still making the festival circuit, but we have a special deal for you guys coming up in a little while. We want to talk about that. So without further ado, Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great. I am just sad that I'm not up there in the midst of the Iditarod Circus with you all.
Well, you know, I think you're the biggest fan outside of Alaska. You're one heck of an Iditarod follower. You made a documentary about it, so that says something. A California guy living his life precariously up here in Alaska.
Yeah, and those of you up in Alaska, please don't hate me because it's slightly warmer here. If I had my druthers, I would be there. I would be there even last month when it was 20 degrees below zero.
Well, you know,
my heart is really up in Alaska and really with the Iditarod, which is just such a phenomenal and inspiring event and really just wonderful. And I'm very happy to be part of this this broadcast.
You know, it's a balmy 32 degrees, at least the last time I drove by one of those time and temperature things at the bank. So it's quite warm here in the mushing capital of the world of Willow, Alaska. So you aren't missing too much. It's probably only 70 degrees warmer or so down where you're at.
Well, maybe not quite that warm. But, you know, we have no insulation here, so it feels colder.
Well, you know, I don't have any insulation in my house either, so I know what to expect.
Okay. Well, then how do you manage when it's 20 below up in Willow?
Well, you know, we have a little bit of insulation, but we're living in truly an Alaskan cabin, a log cabin. So, you know, we spend a heck of a lot of time stoking the fire and filling up the heating oil tank.
That sounds great.
So,
you know, you're...
Go ahead, Alex.
Sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say that Hugh Neff, who is... co-host the Gypsy Musher show that you do, and who had a fabulous victory in the Yukon Quest a few weeks ago, had a great, great line about the Iditarod. He said, the Yukon Quest is a zoo, and the Iditarod is a circus.
Oh, yeah. And it truly is. I've been involved with this the last couple of years. By far, this is my most involved this year. And with your help, we're really rocking and rolling up here, not only on the radio, but on our Facebook page at DogWorks Radio. Things are just flying all over the place, and it truly is a circus all over the Matsu Valley.
Yeah, and this year in particular, it seems that there is a lot of stuff going on for people to follow the race on social media. There's a lot of mushers have Facebook pages. We're going to have a lot of stuff on the DogWorks Radio Facebook page. There are also a lot of people who are on Twitter. You can follow it with the hashtag Iditarod40 or the hashtag Iditarod. And there's a lot of great information that is out there.
There is, and like you said, social media has become kind of the way to go in terms of following the race. Everybody does have that Facebook page, blogs, Twitters, YouTube accounts, just about everything, and definitely all of the big names do that, and you know, quite a few of the smaller named mushers do as well. But what a way to stay with your fans than having them as friends on Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah, and one of the great things about mushing in particular and the Iditarod as sort of the pinnacle of competitive mushing is that unlike a sport like basketball or football, where the top athletes and the top people who participate are completely inaccessible, the mushers and the people who are most involved in Iditarod are relatively accessible. They are, you know, there are big gatherings like the Iditarod banquet that happened last night, where people can literally meet and talk to every single musher who is in the race. And that's unheard of for the top competitors in a sport.
Yeah, exactly. And I attended that banquet just a couple of years ago, and I was absolutely amazed at all the people that come to that event. 2,000 or 3,000 people flock to that that event to watch the mushers draw their numbers and auctions and food and drink and the whole nine yards. It's really a big festival for the Iditarod, and that's what it's all about. For the mushers and the dogs, it's all about the race, but this is one of the few sporting events outside, I guess, the Super Bowl, where it's a week-long party. It's something that goes on all the time. And on our show just the other night, we were talking to Greg Sellenton. He is the editor of Mushing Magazine. And he says that the Iditarod has got to be the biggest event in Alaska, maybe even bigger than the state fair.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's something that even the people who don't make it to the start, the ceremonial start in Anchorage or the start of the real race in Willow the next day, even the people who aren't there in person are following it on TV or on the radio, are following it online, and it's really something that captures the imagination and the real soul of Alaska.
So, Alex, before we get into what we're going to talk about over the next couple of weeks, we introduced you as being the writer and director of your documentary, Mush, the movie, or maybe it's just called Mush, I'm not sure. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we're going to talk about our giveaway here on the show.
Okay, I had been following the Iditarod for 4 or 5 years, and like a lot of people, I started following the race because I loved the dogs, and I loved the idea of watching the dogs and seeing the dogs do these amazing things. And as I got more involved in the race, I started following it online through the Iditarod Insider, which is a really wonderful resource as well for people. And I was reading about it, reading books about it, reading, you know, various things that mushers and people covering the sport had written. And then I came up to Alaska and started meeting some of the mushers and experiencing some of the things that went on around the race. And I was surprised by how much activity there is and how much of the race itself is fantastic and inspiring. And the people who are at the front, the competitors, the real contenders to win the race, are just amazing. But there's also a lot of other things going on, and there's a lot of interesting stories about the volunteers. There's a lot of interesting stories about the way that the race is put together, and I became enamored of the what a lot of people who are involved with the Iditarod call the back of the packers. Those are the people who are in the race and are good enough and tough enough to finish the race, but they know that they're never going to win. But they're doing this race for various reasons. Some people do it because they want to publicize a certain cause, like people who are cancer survivors run the race, and various other things. People run the race for sobriety, for literacy, different kind of things. Those stories are all fascinating to me. And I thought to myself, there is so clearly a movie in this, someone must be already doing it. And so I didn't do anything about this for a couple of years. And then it became clear to me that nobody actually was doing this movie. And I thought, well, I really want to see that movie, because there's all of this great stuff that I don't think people know about unless they're intimately involved with the sport. And so I came up and made this movie on a shoestring because the money that I was expecting to raise for it fell through at the last minute, and was able to put it together, and it premiered in December of 2010 at the Anchorage International Film Festival. It's been playing some other film festivals and will be available, I believe, later this year. And we're going to do a giveaway of advanced screening copies of this, which are not the perfect, exact, pristine thing that will be available later, but are the movie that people can watch.
And we're going to give away one of those movies every night here on Mushing Radio. You can find out more about that on our Facebook page at Dog Works Radio. Just search that in the search box. And the only way you have to enter to win this is become a fan of our Facebook page. And we're going to draw a number or a name after the show every night. We're going to close it at midnight Eastern time, which is 8 o'clock Alaska time. And we're just going to pick a number from the likes of the day, the likes on our Facebook page, and we'll contact you. And you will be one of the first people in the nation, especially for all these Iditarod fans, Mushing fans that wanted to see this movie and follow the movie on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else. You will have an advanced copy of this film, and Alex has been so gracious to provide those. So, Alex, we got to give you kudos there. It's one heck of a movie. I was attending the premiere, and that's where you and I met a couple of years ago. And what a way to go. What a movie to watch in relation to this great sport and this great race coming up starting tomorrow.
When I started making this movie, my goal was to have it premiere in Anchorage. And a lot of people said, well, why didn't you have it at Sundance, or why didn't you have it here or there? And I said, this is a movie for and about Alaskans, and I wanted to show it first to Alaskans. And the greatest piece of praise that I got was, a friend of mine who was at the premiere said to me, I can't believe this movie was made by someone who doesn't live in Alaska. Because my friend said that I was able to capture the spirit of this event. And I think the spirit of the Iditarod is a uniquely Alaskan thing. And so I'm very pleased with the way it turned out.
So, guys, make sure you go over to our Facebook page and like us right now, and you have the chance to win tonight. So we're looking forward to seeing your name on our Facebook page. It's Dog Works Radio. Just search that in the search box. So, Alex, let's talk about what we're going to be doing over the next couple of weeks. Our plan is to host a show every night starting tomorrow morning. It's going to be a show during the ceremonial start tomorrow and the restart on Sunday. And then starting on Monday evening at 6:30 Alaska time, which will actually be 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, but it will be available for download so you can listen the next day or stay up late and listen to it if you care to. But what are we going to cover over the next couple of weeks? What is your plan for this show, Alex?
Well, I think that there's a number of things that are really great that we're going to have a chance to cover. Obviously, we'll cover what's going on in the race, both at the front end and at the back end. So we'll be talking about the people who are in the lead, what's going on at the very leading edge of the race, but we'll also be talking about the people who are in the back. And a lot of times when the race is covered, especially when the race is covered in the mainstream media, it focuses on the three or four or five mushers who really are in contention and can win. And that's great and that's exciting, but there's 61 other mushers and 61 other teams who are competing, and they all have stories as well. So we're gonna talk about some of the human interest stories. We're gonna talk about some of the issues that come up this year, some of the issues regarding the sport of mushing. Robert, I know that you haven't really talked about yourself, at least not tonight, but you moved from Colorado to Alaska to pursue your dream of running the Iditarod, and you're building your kennel and starting to do some of your preliminary races and getting that lined up. And so you bring a really interesting and inspiring perspective to this. And that's going to be an important thing to talk about as well.
Exactly. Thank you very much for the words. Yes, we did move up here August of 2010. We bought our cabin pretty much sight unseen. I brought my daughter up here on 4th of July weekend in 2010. I said, okay, Nicole, it's your choice. If you want to live in Alaska, make sure you text your mom and tell her yes or no, and it's your choice. So I left it in the hands of a 12-year-old at the time on whether we were going to move to Alaska from the big city of Denver. And here we are. I'm at my home studio right now, and my daughter and my wife are making me a very nice birthday dinner. It's my birthday this evening, and they're patiently waiting for me to get off the radio so we can celebrate tonight. So I have to commend what a great family I have and support with that, and we will talk about that as we're going into the show. And speaking of that, tomorrow morning I will be down at the ceremonial start in Anchorage, and starting at 9:30 Alaska time, 9:30 a.m., we are going to have Alex on the line from California and my wife, Michelle. She's also the co-host of our other internet radio shows, but she will be in the studio on 89.5 in Palmer, Alaska. And you guys are going to carry this show for us live on the air while I call in sporadically as we can. If anybody's been to the start, they know exactly what I'm talking about. Well over 1,000 dogs spread out over 10 blocks or so, and I'm going to be running around with like a chicken with my head cut off trying to get some interviews. So I'll be calling in sporadically through the show. So that's our plan for Saturday and Sunday. Anything else you want to talk about in regards for the ceremonial start and the restart tomorrow and Sunday, Alex?
Yeah, the ceremonial start is kind of like a carnival. It's an amazing atmosphere. I talked to Anchorage policeman who said that they estimate that there are 15,000 people who are in that 10-block area downtown. There's a parking garage there that I think is 5 or 6 stories tall, and there are thousands of people who line up on that parking garage. The race goes right past them. Right about now, they are starting to bring in the trucks of snow. The race actually runs through the streets of downtown, and then it turns and goes down a big hill and then goes into the parkland, into the woods, ending up at the airfield, at an old airfield. So it's 11 miles that they run in the ceremonial start. And it's, one of the things that happens is each team has what is called an Iditarider, who's someone who wins an auction to ride in the sled with the musher for the first 11 miles. And that's a pretty amazing experience. And I know that there are some people who, after being Iditariders, decide that mushing is what they want to do, and they start mushing themselves. I believe Pat Moon was an Iditarider 6 or 7 years ago, and now he's competing in the Iditarod this year. So that's a very exciting thing.
It is. And if I can just interject there for just a second, Alex, a lot of times some of the big corporate sponsors, I know one of the main sponsors this year, I believe it's Dolan Gold, they gave away their Iditarider spot to a young man with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So it's kind of his wish to be a part of that. And what a special story that is to really, find out what it's like to be the life of a musher for one day for that young man.
Yeah, and not only do they ride in the sled, but there's a lunch that is thrown by the Iditarod for the mushers and the Iditariders, which I believe was today. And so it's an opportunity for these people to really get a chance to spend some time with the musher and get to know them a little bit. And then it helps raise money for the Iditarod itself. And the Iditarod is an enormous undertaking, and it's a very expensive event to pull off. We haven't really talked about what the race itself is yet, but it is officially a 1,049-mile dog race from Anchorage to Nome, Alaska. And it is a over-grueling terrain, and the temperatures sometimes get down to 60 or 70 degrees below zero, and there is horrific wind at times, and it is really something that is not for the faint of heart. I have a tremendous amount of admiration for all of the mushers. I think anyone who qualifies for and enters the Iditarod is a hero. Anyone who manages to finish the Iditarod, even if they're the last person who comes in, is even more of a hero. So I have a great deal of admiration for everyone who competes in this race. And the thing that I like best about fans of Iditarod is generally people definitely have their favorites. They'll root for Lance Mackey, or they'll root for John Baker or Jeff King or someone, but almost to a person, people who are fans of the race want everyone to do well and want everyone to finish and to be safe and to have all of their dogs be in great condition. And that is kind of an amazing thing.
I agree. It's not like that in very many other sports that we participate in or watch on television or the internet in America. Most of us are rooting for, you know, for the best team, the team of the year or whatever, whoever won the Super Bowl or the, you know, the World Series or whatever. But in mushing, it truly is a full field fan supported adventure. You know, everybody roots for John Baker all the way down to I don't recall who was the Red Lantern winner last year, and the Red Lantern is an award given out to the person that comes in last into Nome, and it's a very special honor too. Like Alex just said, just finishing the race is one of the toughest things that most people ever do in their lives. So everybody down from first place to well into the 60th place this year will be honored by tons of fans, whether they're armchair mushers, virtual mushers, mushers that have dreams and desires of running the race one day, or just the casual fan that reads about it in the Anchorage Daily News or something of that nature.
Yeah, and when I was when I made the movie, I was out in Nome for the finish, for the tail end of the race in 2010. And one of the things that impressed me the most is that the last three or four people who came in, they sound a siren in Nome whenever a musher is, I think, a mile away. So people run out and they run to the finish line. And of course, there's a lot more people there when it's the winner. But even the person who was, I forget what place it was, 55th place or 56th place, there were about 100 people who came out there. And among those 100 people were a lot of the mushers. And I was particularly impressed when the Red Lantern came in that Lance Mackey, who had just won the race for the fourth year in a row and who is just a phenomenal figure in dog racing, he was one of the first people who came out and greeted the woman who got the Red Lantern. And that is such an astonishing feat of sportsmanship, and really, I think, emphasizes that there is a fraternity of people who run dogs. And you don't have to always agree with everyone. You don't have to have the same taste in everything. But at the end of the day, you're all people who do this very special thing, and that's what bonds you.
And that's exactly right. And I don't know how many times we've been in some type of pickle, whether we're stuck in a mud puddle or something down the line, and or a dog gets loose, and everybody jumps to your aid. It is a kind of a brotherhood or a fraternity, if you will, of us mushers, and it is a remarkable thing. I'd never seen anything like that. And you often hear people that are new to Alaska or new to Alaskan mushing say the same thing. It is a different type of folks that are involved with this. It's not always about me. It's all about paying honor to the sport and the history of the sport, as well as helping out each other on the trail, because you're going to need that. You're going to need that in those death-defying temperatures, minus 60 below sometimes, and blizzards where you can't see even your lead dogs in front of you. You're going to need that brother or sister on the trail that can give you a hand. They can't necessarily assist you in any way, but they can at least make sure that you're not in a dire circumstance, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's interesting that you mentioned your brother or sister, because this is one of the few sports where women compete directly with men. And although we haven't had a woman who's won the race in a while, there was a time in the 80s where the women were absolutely dominant in the Iditarod. And Susan Butcher won 4 races. Libby Riddles was the first woman to win the Iditarod. And in the 80s, there was a bumper sticker that was very popular in Alaska that said, "Alaska, where men are men and women win the Iditarod."
I haven't seen that one. That was a little before my time, but that's a great bumper sticker.
Yeah.
So let's go into Sunday a little bit. I don't want to give everything away on the first show, but Sunday is the real start of the race. It's in Willow, right in my backyard, about 3 miles from here on Willow Lake, and that is the real start of the race. That's when the times start, and that's 2 p.m. Alaska time. We will be hosting live on the air from 1:30 to 2:30 Alaska time for that. But now, Alex, let's talk a little bit about, we have about 18 minutes left, let's talk about the order for the mushers to go out. They, as we said at the banquet last night, they drew their numbers on when they will leave the starting chute with their dogs. And I found it rather interesting, and fans of mushing know the name. It's synonymous with Iditarod and mushing. Reddington. He and his family helped found this race. But I found it very interesting that his grandsons, Ray Reddington Jr. and Ryan Reddington, are bookmarking the start and finish of the mushers leaving the chute. That is something, I guess it's fate, I don't know. But I thought that was really cool.
I think it's a really amazing thing. This is the 40th anniversary of the Iditarod race, and the first race in 1973, Joe Reddington Sr. basically willed the race into existence. He had this idea that he wanted to run a very long distance race from Anchorage all the way to Nome. Nobody even knew if it was possible to do that at the time, and the first race was very different from the modern race. The trail was broken by the competitors, who would walk ahead in snowshoes. It took a very long time for them to finish the first race. I believe the winner in 1973 came in something like 20 days. I don't have the figure in front of me, but in any event, it was a very long time. And it was less in that first year, it was less a competition than kind of a big organized camping trip. And the Joe Reddington had promised that there would be $50,000 in prize money, and he was intending to compete in the race himself, but he was so busy trying to raise the prize money that he didn't have time to train. He eventually did raise the money, but when the racers started from Anchorage, the prize money was not yet secured. He managed to get it all by the time they arrived in Nome, but it was very much a seat of the pants operation. that he really moved heaven and earth to make happen.
Alex, if I can, I want to interrupt you for just a second. We are a live radio show, and of course we have our followers on Facebook, and there's some breaking news. This is kind of interesting here on Mushing Radio, mushingradio.com. This was sent over by a Facebook friend, Zoya Denur, who is a very popular musher in Iditarod. She's a former runway model and does very well in the Iditarod. Her and her husband have a great team up near Fairbanks. But evidently, Alex, this is very interesting. She says, my team just got tangled with a moose over on Tozier Track, which is a sprint mushing track in downtown Anchorage. Demon was kicked in the head, and it sounds like he's hurting pretty bad. My race sled got hammered too. Demon is on his way to see the vet team right now. That's a sorry state of affairs for Zoya and one of her dogs on her team. What do you think about that?
That's a little bit shocking. For a number of reasons. The Anchorage Daily News has a Meet the Sled Dogs feature, and they just did one that Kyle Hopkins does, and they just did one on Demon, who was Zoya Denur. Many of her dogs are rescue dogs, or dogs who were unwanted, or shelter dogs, or dogs who really needed rehabilitation, and Demon was a dog that was very antisocial and would snap and bite at people. So it's obviously a very, very sad thing whenever a dog gets hurt. And I believe Demon was her main lead dog. So if he is badly injured, that would be devastating for her race.
You know, that's an unconfirmed report. You know, we're sitting here on the internet, and like I said, I'm at the home studio right now. But the guy that sent me that message, he's pretty respected, at least in my opinion, on Iditarod and Mushing Matters. So we give our best to Zoya and her team. I hope things turn out well. What a way to have this, you know, a Friday night, literally less than 24 hours, less than 18 hours before the start of the race for something like this to happen.
Yeah, and the other thing that I wanted to just mention is that every single musher that is competing, and in fact every single musher I've met, their primary concern is for the safety and well-being of the dogs. And I have every confidence that whatever the situation turns out to be, that Zoya will do whatever is best for her team.
Yeah.
Even if that means that she withdraws.
So we'll keep you guys up to date. I'm sure it will be all over the internet within time, and we do want to wish her the best. She and I talk on Facebook from time to time, and we just hope everything turns out all right for her and her team. So if we can, Alex, we have a few minutes left. We were talking about the Reddingtons there and how they're starting out on the bookend, so to speak, of the starting order and finishing order. Let's talk a little bit about some of the more popular mushers, names that folks know, pretty much household names, at least in mushing. Number 10 out of the starting chute is Jeff King. He returns after a year from retirement. Do you have a couple of words about Jeff? Let's just spend a sentence or two about each one of these guys as we move on down the list.
Jeff King is a very, very tough competitor. He is the musher who invented or was the first to use the sit-down sled so that you don't have to be up on the runners all of the time. He and Lance Mackey have for years had a very intense rivalry, and there's a lot of psychological operations between the two of them. Anytime Jeff King is in a race, he's not someone you ever want to take for granted or write off.
Right behind him is the reigning champ, 2011 Iditarod champion John Baker, set a record-breaking time of 8 days, some hours. I don't know if that can be broken this year. It's going to be a little bit slower trail, much more snow than last year. Anything you want to say about John?
John is a native Alaskan, and it was the first time that a native had won the race since, I believe, the late 70s, maybe 77. He is absolutely beloved in the interior villages and a great, great competitor. He is the farthest north competitor in the race, and a little bit unusual for long-distance race teams. He does a lot of very, very long training runs. So where a lot of teams will do shorter training runs, he will just go out forever with his dog team. And so obviously he's someone that is going to be a very, very big factor in this race.
So coming out of the chute in 14th position is fan favorite and one heck of a musher, Allie Zirkle. Her husband, Alan Moore, came in a very close second to a good friend of mine, Hugh Neff, in the Yukon Quest. She's leaving 14th. And then 17th and 18th is Didi Genro, big-time fan favorite, also a Willow resident right the road from us here. And 18th, four-time-in-a-row champ, Lance Mackey. You've talked about him a little bit. And then as we're going down the list, Alex, 21st position is second place finisher of the 2011 race, Ramey Smith, also a Willow Houston resident. He's right there on the border. Comes from a very colorful mushing family. His dad, Bud Smith, was one of the first mushers in early Iditarod races. Do you have anything you want to share about Ramey and his family?
Ramey and his family are really, really popular and very strong competitive mushers. I think out of the people that we've mentioned so far, Didi Genro is a beloved figure in mushing. She hasn't quite been able to put it together to take the top spot. This might be her year. Allie Zirkle is just a wonderful ambassador for the sport, and she, I believe she will win the race some year. I'm not positive that it will be this year.
In 25th position is Paul Gephardt. He's been around for a very long time in Iditarod. And then Hugh Neff, he hosts a show here on our network, good friends of mine. I will be down with him tomorrow morning at the ceremonial start. He starts 27th. He is the reigning Yukon Quest champion, record-breaking Yukon Quest champion, Hugh Neff. And then we're going down the list, Christy Barrington, 31st. position, and her twin sister Anna Barrington. I wrote a little article about them on my blog today. I know you're fascinated by these young ladies. What do you have to say about the Barrington twins?
I believe this is the first time there have been a pair of twins running Iditarod, which is fantastic. Christy, I believe, was a rookie in 2010. Running one of Paul Gephardt's team or team out of Paul Gephardt's kennel, and her twin sister, I believe, also has been training with Paul's kennel in Kisilov. And the Barringtons are not going to win the race, but I think they will do very well, and I think they'll get a lot of attention and really bring a lot of smiles to people who are watching.
And Christy did very well last year. She was 29th in, so she had a top 30 finish, which is still in the purse money. So not too bad for a rookie. Then we have a very interesting story, and I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about this on the show, is three generations of mushers. We have Dallas, in 34th, his dad Mitch in 35th, and then his grandfather, one of the first mushers in Iditarod, Dan Seavey, in 65th position. So we're going to talk a lot about those guys as we're going through our daily coverage of Iditarod. Zoya Denur, depending on what happened tonight with her dog Demon, she is scheduled to run out on 53rd place. Then we have Karen Ramstead, big-time fan favorite. She mushes Siberian Huskies. And I know you have spoken to her a few times. Do you have any words about Karen?
Yeah, Karen is a great musher and one of these people who really embodies what the sport is all about. Karen told a story last summer that I heard her tell about her lead dog named Snickers. And she was running Iditarod, I believe it was in 2007, and Snickers was in great health and had finished Iditarod before, and then suddenly didn't seem well at one of the checkpoints and just suddenly died. And this was devastating to Karen, and she actually scratched rather than continue the race. Her fans and the people who were Facebook fans of hers and fans of her blog, took up a collection in memory of Snickers, and they raised money that they gave to a research facility to look into this type of dog death, which was caused by a sudden onset of ulcer. And partially because of the money that they raised, they were able to come up with, the researchers came up with a very, very simple thing that mushers could do, which is basically to give the dogs a variation on peptic AC, an antacid.
Which
basically prevents this kind of sudden extreme ulcer, which has led to dog deaths in the past. And it is my belief, there's a lot of things that go into keeping the dogs healthy, but it's my belief that one of the reasons why we have had no dog deaths in the last 2 years is because of that. So Karen Ramstead is a fantastic person, a great musher, kind of a fan favorite because she has a team of all Siberian Huskies, so they are extremely good-looking dogs. And she will, I'm sure that she'll do very, very well.
And if we could back up just a little bit in terms of the starting order, in 39th position, leaving the chute, is Ken Anderson. I believe he's going to be a force to be reckoned with this year, one of my top five in terms of possible winners. 41st position, Martin Booser, big-time fan favorite, four-time champion of the race, and up until last year had the record-setting pace. Everybody loves Martin. He's one of those guys that we talked about earlier in the show that will give pretty much any time that you need to sit down and talk with you about the sport, a great ambassador for the sport of mushing. And then as we're going...
Absolutely, and a really super, super nice guy.
He is, and it's my understanding, I don't know if this is pure rumor, it was before I arrived in Alaska, it's my understanding he was thinking about running for governor of Alaska. Do you know anything about that?
I actually don't, but I would believe that he could win. Martin Booser is swift, and after September 11th, he decided that he was finally going to get his U.S. citizenship, and I believe he was sworn in as a citizen after he finished the Iditarod in 2002.
Holy cow, I didn't know that either. His son, Roan Booser, is going to be chasing his dad. He is going out in 62nd place, Roan Booser. He is not a rookie. He ran the race in, I'm not sure of the year, but when he was 19. So a young man that has pretty much learned his entire life how to stay stand on a set of runners. And we're going to go over just a couple of minutes, if you don't mind, Alex. It will continue to stream, and it will be for the podcast as well. Let's talk about we already talked about Dan Seavey leaving 65th, and I don't want to leave out any of these big fan favorites. We'll talk much more about them as we're going. Let's talk a little bit about Rick Swenson, five-time winner of the Iditarod, the only person to have won five times. It could possibly be his sixth time winning if he wins it this year or in the coming years. What do you know about Rick Swenson?
I actually haven't spent very much time with Rick Swenson. I know that he is also a very fierce competitor, and he is someone who, just when you think he's peaked and he's not going to be competitive, will just surprise you and come up right behind you. So I would expect that he would be someone who could do very well as well. You know, the other interesting thing about Iditarod and what makes it so fascinating to watch is that in any given year, depending on factors like dumb luck and the weather and how a particular dog feels on a particular day, there probably are maybe 10 to 15 people who have a really excellent chance of winning the race. And each year, those 10 or 15 people at the top slug it out. And oftentimes it comes down to the last 100 or 150 miles, and there still are five or six people who could win the race, given, you know, things breaking in a certain way.
So there you have it, our pre-race commentary here on Mushing Radio, mushingradio.com, and live on the air starting tomorrow morning, 9:30 a.m. on 89.5 in Palmer, Alaska. The range of that station is the lower Mat-Su Valley, but it will be streaming live on the internet as well as a podcast later that day and every night on mushingradio.com. Alex, it's been a pleasure. Any parting words today? We're in for one heck of a ride over the next couple of weeks. I hope we make it through it. There will be bumps in the road. And for any of our fans out there, if we do have a hiccup or two, just hang in there. We'll make sure it runs good. And I believe we lost Alex at the time where our show cut off. So if so, Alex will be on the line tomorrow with his co-host and my business partner, Michelle, and I will be calling in from the ceremonial start in Anchorage. So we look forward to that. So until next time, this is Robert Forto on Mushing Radio. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a good night. Goodbye.